This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and proudly brought to you by our friends at Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Find them at polymorphgames.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
So Trent and Mark, the original Dice Men, the founders of the show, they thought they were legendary. They thought it was splendor in their podcasting citadels.
Yeah.
They thought they could say anything, but the fairy tale couldn't outlive. They got old and grizzled when two young kings of Tokyo arrived. The atmosphere started good, but then turned to a nightmare. They looked above and below, near and far, but the resistance was futile. After 176 episodes, the coup finally happened, and now they are forever stuck in the abyss in our five-minute dungeon.
Wow, that was pretty good, wasn't it, Leon?
I know, I'd like to think so. So yes, indeed, this is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, brought to you this week by PolymorphGames.com, your friendly localhood.
Localhood.
I get that wrong every time. Game retailer at the end of your fingertips. So at episode 177 on this Thursday, the 10th of August. And if you didn't know, yes, the old fellas aren't here. It is the two young lions taking over.
And aren't we lucky?
Aren't we lucky? Are we?
Well, we've got youth and vigour on our side.
We do indeed.
A few extra years of life, so surely that's all good.
That is indeed. So what are we going to do with those extra years on the show tonight?
Well, first of all, I think we're going to cut to a song and we'll come back straight after that to tell everyone what we've got going on this week.
We can do that.
Well, there you go. That was Blainiven with I Will Be the World. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With just Garth and just Leon today.
It is.
So it's exciting. So we didn't get to say what we were doing tonight.
No.
Because we had to go to that song.
Yes.
But tonight we are going to do a double what we've been playing this week because
yes.
There's two of us and we can do one each. That sounds about fair, don't you reckon?
That makes sense, yeah.
Then you're going to tell us all about Gen Con, which
is coming up
soon.
Yes.
Now that's going to be pretty exciting. Have you done much research for it?
I've done a little bit of bibs and bobs compared to what I normally do. I've done heaps of research.
Love it. That sounds good. I've got a little bit of iOS news to go through as well, and that'll probably take us to the end of the show. So we better get cracking, hey?
We should indeed get cracking.
Now, Leon.
Yes.
You've just bought a house.
I have just bought a house. I've been in the throes of buying a new house and selling my old house for the last 6 months.
Hey.
Some of it was good. The good bits were good. The rest of it was horror.
Yeah, it sounds like buying a house.
Even though I had nice people. But now I am in the house. I am customizing to my own self. I've, as I put up on Facebook the other day, started my Rumpus journey, which has now got its 8-ball table in there and all my board games and comics all set up. I just need to get one of those pesky game tables in there now, which I either have to buy for a ridiculous fee or make one of my own.
Yep.
I haven't discussed which to do yet. But if you don't have the luck of being able to buy a very, very nice house right this moment, what you can do is go to the old Asmodee, who have made a game or two over the years.
Just one or two, yeah.
And you can play their game called Dream Home.
Aww.
Which, of course, we played recently. We might have played at the BorderCon.
Mark's not here, so we're fine.
Oh, we're allowed to say it. That's
fine.
Yeah, we played at the BorderCon. We've played nothing of late because why haven't? Because I've been dealing with the house stuff.
Yay.
Anyway, so she's a 2-4 player game that takes around. We were taught it by, do you remember the name of the lovely lady that taught it to us?
No, I don't.
Either way.
She was wife of one of the organisers.
She was.
At BorderCon.
But yeah, she was awesome. And I apologise for forgetting your name, love. But yeah, she taught it to us and we played it in 30 minutes.
Yep.
If that. So it's a pretty simple game. Each player gets a blank house tableau in front of them that has 12 slots in it. You've got two garage spots on the bottom, and then the first floor you've got 5 empty spots, and then the one after that you've got 5 more. So it is quite a nice little house. Although I don't know if it's a dream considering all your friends and neighbours have the exact same layout.
Well,
at first, anyway,
it might be the Stepford dream.
Yes, the outside of the house is the same, and then there was also a roof you can put on the house because most houses need roofs these days.
Far out,
which
they just
is
want and want and want.
I know there's always bloody well something, so we'll get to that anyway. So the game is played over 12 rounds. So you're going to do a bit of card drafting between each round. So what you're going to do is on the turn, there's going to be a center board where everyone will get cards from. There's 4 rows of cards that have 2 in them, so you can either take one of those sets of 2 cards out of those 4 rows, or one of them, that only has one card in it, but has the first player marker.
Kind of important, that
kind of important. I found that to be quite helpful when we played the game. Spoilers, yeah. I spanked them. I spanked them very much.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So you can set one card and you get your first player marker, which then the next round means you get first pick of all the stuff in front of you, which for the start of the game, you don't really know what you're going after unless you've kind of played it before. But once it gets to the later phases and there's specific cards you need, it very much comes in handy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. Keep telling us about this wonderful victory.
Well, you know, what can I say? I don't get many of them, so it's nice to mention it from time to time. Yeah, so from then you have to build your house from the ground up. So you can't build until you've built the foundation of your house, which is, you know, got a bit of logic to it.
Yeah, but that's usually you're starting with your garage, though, aren't you?
Well, that's the thing. You've got your garage, which you can't build any... There's the two spaces for that. You can't build anything on top of them. However, next to the garage, there is just a big old stack of bricks, which is the bottom bit of your house. You can build on top of them onto the first floor. But yeah, you need to build stuff onto the garage spaces before you can build anything on top of them. There's all different kinds of rooms. There's lounge rooms. You may have known that. It's mm-hmm. where the lounge is.
Ah.
There's kitchens. There's bathrooms. There's game rooms because, you know, what's the point of building a dream home if it doesn't have a game room in it? And you get more points by collecting more sets. So if you get a lounge room, I think it's worth, like, say, 1 point for one room. But if you get three of them in a row and you've got your big old lounge room, you get like 9 points at the end of the game.
Cool.
But you need to have them all next to each other for this to be achieved, which is not necessarily easy when you've got people drafting and all that kind of jazz in front of you. So you're trying to get the best that you actually possibly can. Yeah, so you've got to get the most amount of points by getting the correct amount of cards. There's also special decor.
Words.
Yeah. I'm not good at the reading and the speaking at the same time. So decor items like pianos and spa bars and birdhouses that you can get that will give you extra points. But what they do is when you put them into certain rooms or the places you're allowed to, they actually end that room. So if you've got a lounge room that's only got two out of the three sections yeah. and you put a piano in it, that's it. You can't have a third lounge room next to it, which is annoying and seems weird, but, you know, that's kind of the whole point of the game. There are also helper cards. There are helper cards and tool cards that you can get. The helper cards will help give you special conditions for victory points at the end. So there might be certain helpers like plumber who wants you to have as many bathrooms and kitchens as possible so, you know, he can get some money out of you and stuff to that effect. Or there are tool cards which gives you one-off special abilities, something like, you know, you pick up two cards, put one back in the deck and take one that you want. Things like that. They kind of change the game up a bit.
Sounds nice.
There's also roof cards that you can pick. And all they are just blank cards that are different colours. Because at the end of the game, if you take any of these roof cards, you put them face down on your tableau in front of them. And once you've put them there, it's a bit of an odd thing in a kind of kid's family game. Once you've picked that card up and put it down, you're not allowed to look at it again. So you have to remember what kind of colour roof you've got.
Mm.
Because at the end of the game, you can have, obviously, up to 5 tiles in your roof to complete it. If you complete your roof, you get bonus points. If your roof is all the same colour, which is what I did, you get even more bonus points. But again, you've got to remember what colour it actually was. Also, if you pick up a room card that you have to place, because at the end of the 12 rounds, you will have a full house. We'll all have a full house at the end of it. At the end of that, if you cannot place it, dictated by the rules of what you've got in front of you, you have to put it face down, which means it's worth nada, and it's not ideal because once you get to the end of game, there are various things like functionality is a big thing in this game, which I think is actually kind of a neat feature,
yep.
that you get extra points if your house actually looks like a house. If you have 12 tiles that are all game rooms, good on you. We want to be your mate, but you ain't got a toilet in there, buddy.
No.
We're going to need one of them at least some point. With my bladder, you're definitely going to need one of them. But you get extra points for having, I think it was a bathroom on each level, you get extra points. If you have a kitchen, a lounge room, and a bathroom in your house, you get extra points and stuff like that. So there's lots of different combinations you can pick from. And as I said, you're drafting these cards, so you've got people picking before you so they could do the old pick the things that you want and the abilities that you want. And that's pretty much what it is. You go through the 12 rounds of that. You pick all that kind of stuff up, and then whoever has the most points based off all the different combinations of cards is the winner at the end of it.
Yeah, it's very straightforward and very simple to teach and very easy to play.
Yeah.
And it's just cute.
And it's very colourful. It's a nice little game.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I think would not be out of place if it was in a big mass retail shop, if they sold it for a reasonable price. It's something that I think a lot of homes could probably have a game like this.
Exactly.
Because it's not much to take care of.
No, it's not much. But I look at it as a family game and I think, okay, I've got two kids aged almost 10 and almost 7 now.
Yep.
And would they play it over and over again? And I don't think the answer is yes.
Well, that is the thing. I think the replayability with this and the fact that it could get rather repetitive is a bit of an issue. Like I said, there are those, the tool cards and the worker cards, which can give you different combinations. So depending on what you get of them, it will give you kind of different goals to go for. And it's also a game that this is only the base game. You know, board games, you might have noticed, like an expansion from time to time. So this is a game that I think could benefit from an expansion to either give you more stuff or add in some new rules or whatever else, which they might do because it's been relatively successful.
Yeah.
But to counterpoint that, I've actually specifically written down here the fact that it is very light and could get repetitive and would you want to play it over and over again?
Yes.
King Domino just won the Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah.
So you could argue is one of the biggest games in the world at the moment and he's going to now get an even bigger wide release.
Queen Domino's coming out now on the back of that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, someone's done better research than me. Good. How is the Queen Domino going to be any different?
I don't know. I haven't done that much research.
Just a nicer box, probably?
Yeah, possibly.
Anywho, so, yeah, my point being is that Dream Home, I don't think the replayability and the lightness is any different than King Domino.
No, okay.
Did you play King Domino?
No, I didn't. I think you were the only one of us who played that at Mahon.
I played it with Mark because I'd played it and then 5 minutes later taught him because it only takes 30 seconds. Well, there you go. King Domino is quicker to teach than what Dream Home is.
Okay.
And the criticism of Dream Home is obviously, you know, and it is a family game, so it's not really a criticism because you don't want family games to be complicated.
No.
I'm sure you've probably had the experience of sitting down with your kids going like, I think you're going to like this.
Yes.
And then if you haven't explained those rules the right way, the right day,
yep,
depending on probably how much sugar's in those kids, it might go really well or it might not.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, it's a bit
It is very for me.
But it was nice. We had good fun. We had good people. But if it was a thing that if you didn't, I mean, obviously a lot of our listeners have families,
yep,
which is awesome. But people like myself, you know, that don't have younger kids.
You have cats.
I do have cats, and they're not great with rules, if I'm honest. They're good at flumping onto boards and just knocking stuff everywhere. but, yeah, I don't imagine it would probably be a thing in my collection, but it's a thing, I think, if you could pick it up for cheap enough, could fit in a few different collections.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't pick it up.
Yeah. Even cheap?
No, because there's just too much better stuff out there. Like, I have had a really sick son this week. He has not gone to school at all this week. And
like really good skateboarding tricks and stuff?
No, not like epic.
Oh, he's not like that sick.
No.
He's the bad sick.
Exactly. And he's not fat P-H-A-T either.
No.
You know? But what we did do on Sunday morning is I cracked open Seven Wonders Duel and taught him that.
Oh!
Now, he's 9, almost 10 now.
Yeah, okay.
And before that, we've played a lot of games, but, you know, primarily things like Sushi Go Party, and then your more traditional Mousetraps and Battleships and
all that kind of jazz.
Da, 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 da. I taught him Seven Wonders Duel in about 10 to 15 minutes.
Yep.
Which is, it could easily explain it shorter, but I wanted to make sure
he got it. And it's obviously head's a bit fluey at the moment.
Yeah, which, it's clogged.
Yeah.
But we got into that, and he just hit the ground running.
Yeah.
He got the whole methodology behind it. He figured out, you know, that the symbol on one card means that he'll be able to buy a free card sooner on in generation, an age 2 or age 3.
Yep.
He understood the military track.
Yep.
And we had a fantastic 45 minutes or so where we played, and it was brilliant. It took just the gaming with me and my son to the next level because it's taking that step into more of the games that I'm going to play with him.
Well, from that game, yeah, you could lead on to a lot of other things because it is just iconography kind of thing. And once you've got that out, like from there, you could move on to lots of other. You could move on to your Five Tribes, your Ticket to Rides and stuff, which has just got, once you explain the rules and they know what each of the colourful different bits on it mean, you're pretty much golden. I actually wrote down one as well that I played at BorderCon, which we might do a review for sometime in the future, because as I was researching this, I went, I remember that game. I liked that game. I'm going to go buy that game. And I got on the old interwebs and bought it.
Yes.
And that was called The Best Treehouse Ever.
Ah,
and after I played this, I specifically told to you, you should check this out. I think you and the kids might like it.
Yep.
And the whole point of this game is that you have everyone's got a treehouse, mm-hmm. and you are kind of exactly like Dream Home, as you are set to build the best treehouse ever. You've got all these cool rooms, and they're all exaggerated, crazy things like a basketball court going in your treehouse and like a games room, a laser tag room and stuff like that. But there's all different kind of combinations of rooms, and they're all different colours because there's things like – there's like food – rooms as well,
yeah,
like different food stalls there. I think they're brown, and then there's like all the different kind of water ones, like there's a pool and there's beach volleyball or something like that, and they're blue, all that kind of jazz. So you're building up this treehouse, but you got to make sure that it stays balanced, because if the tree falls go to one way or the other, it can't work. And there's a scoring mechanism in that's really good, that each round people get to pick on which colors are going to score multiple points,
yep.
which ones are going to score none.
Ah,
so you get to look around the board and go, well, that person's got heaps of red and I've got none, so that's going to score none this round.
Yep.
So something like that. Also, very similar, kind of similar age bracket, but overall, probably a better game and worth checking
and
out.
And just more fun. You know, yeah. It's more fun building a bowling alley in the treehouse rather than a kitchen in my
Well, as I
house.
Said, I play with my nieces from time to time, but I play mainly with other adults.
Yep.
I wouldn't buy Dream Home just to play with other adults. I did, however, buy Best Treehouse Ever.
Sure.
Because I know me and my friends will have a laugh with it.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to add two more to it, and then we'll go and take another break.
Yep.
Dungeon Roll, which is just a little short, sharp dice rolling game about exploring dungeons. My 7-year-old particularly, she loves that game, mm-hmm. and she gets it. And then Jeju Island, which is this little trail games one, which again uses the Mancala mechanic, similar to Five Tribes and Istanbul almost, that kind of thing. So again, teaching very simple mechanics that can lead on into much more advanced games as the child grows into an adult.
That's another one in the chain that I talked about when we talked about Yokohama.
Yeah.
I said you play Five Tribes, which leads to Istanbul, which leads to Yokohama.
Yep.
But you've got to play Jeju Island before Five Tribes.
Exactly.
There you go. That's 4 weekends in a month.
There you go. That's pretty good.
Yep.
Well, look, Leon, thanks so much. I still don't want to play it, but it was a lovely, cute game. And thank you very much to, again, the name escapes me, for teaching it.
Nice lady.
So, look, we'll come back and we will talk about yet another game that we played at BorderCon.
Indeed.
This one is the game of non-moving carrots.
Yes.
And it will make sense after this song. You are with the Dice Men Cometh, who are this week proudly presented by Polymorph Games and Hobbies. We'll be back just after this song.
That was Nation Blue with Erectile Dysfunction there, a tribute to our comrades not in the studio this evening.
Ah.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you this week by polymorphgames.com. Get on there, buy some games, they will send it to you. They are good folk, support them as they support us.
Ah, that's so sweet, Leon.
I know, I like to help the people that like to help us.
Ah, you are so good. So speaking of being really nice,
yeah,
we played a game at BorderCon.
We did.
Now, it was a pretty good game, except this bloody carrot, which ruined the game.
Yeah.
Now, the game we're going to talk about is called Starving Artists.
Yes.
Now, this is a successfully funded on Kickstarter not too long ago,
mm-hmm.
And essentially, you're all playing, let me guess, Starving Artists.
Shockingly.
Yes, where all you're trying to do is paint pretty pictures and eat and survive for another day.
I mean, it doesn't sound like the worst way to live.
No, but when you die a horrible, painful death, which is starvation. And I'm sure that's not a very, very nice way to go.
I'd say not, but no. I'll let you know when I get to that bit.
All right. So, look, in this game, there's only a couple of things that you're ever going to do, but you're going to have a whole bunch of very pretty, different coloured cubes that you'll be using to fill in empty spaces on very famous works of art. So you might have The Scream, or you might have Starry, Starry Night, or you might have another famous painting. And there are heaps of them. So clearly the designer has or hasn't got approval to use all the original artwork, because it's all original famous artworks.
Yeah. I know it's kind of a boring thing to say, but I did like the art in this game because it is based off the, like, 50 greatest pieces of art in the modern world.
Yeah.
But
thanks,
Mark. But, well, sorry. Someone's going to do it, but what can I say? I like nice things.
Yeah, exactly right. Look, it is beautiful. It looks good when it's on the table. But what are we talking about? It's Starving Artists. This game plays in under an hour, hopefully. And really, it's going to be made up of two phases. There's a day phase and a night phase. Now, the day phase is where you'll get to do a whole bunch of potentially different actions. You might be able to paint. So you might be able to get up to 4 of your paint cubes from the bag and put them into your painting area.
Or how was it that I pronounced it? Do you remember?
No.
Do you want me to do it?
Go on.
I'm going to paint. That is my starving, arrogant artist voice.
Yeah.
I am going to paint.
Going to paint. Oh, dear.
I believe a whole sitcom came out of that voice, which yeah. He had a next-door neighbour who was much less pretentious, stupider, but was much more successful, and he hated him. It was like The Odd Couple circa, like, 1560 in Paris. Either way, we might have had a drink or two. That's beside the point.
Look, yes. You got to paint.
I got to paint.
No, that's the main thing.
Yep.
But look, you get to paint. You also have to lower your nutrition level.
Yes, you do.
Because surprisingly, every day an artist got to eat.
Which is, I mean, do they really?
Well, apparently so.
I mean, yeah. I mean, 2-minute noodles aren't that expensive. But,
I know.
But apparently back in the day, they didn't even have 2-minute noodles.
Exactly.
What a world they live
in. Now, you can only survive for, I believe, 5 days without food in this game. And once you starve, which there's a fair chance it's going to happen in your first game or two, that basically signals one of the end-of-game conditions where everyone else gets one more round.
Yes, and before anybody asks, because, yes, it was the first question we asked too, no, you cannot eat the paint. The first thing we come up with.
And I'm sure that you could, like, 3D paint a hot dog or something, couldn't you?
No, they didn't have that back
then
either.
Back then?
No, it was horrible.
All right, so anyway, you're going to do your daytime phase where you can buy a new piece of art, because there are going to be always 3 available pieces of art, and they will cost between 1 to 3 cubes depending on their position in the track. So you can choose to buy that on your turn, or, as we said, you can choose to paint, which is take some cubes from your own private easel, whatever it was. And put those cubes into the right coloured cube holes on these paintings. Now, most of the actual placement for the cubes, they're only one colour. Like, you might have to place a red cube in the red square or the green cube in the green square. But some of them mix it up a bit by allowing 1 or 2 different colours to go in there. So the square that you can put your cube might be half yellow and half red to keep you on your toes.
And the colours that you were using did most of the time correspond to the actual painting you were trying to paint.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch, because they didn't have to do that,
but
it worked out well.
It was a good touch.
Yeah.
You put your cubes on there and
A second later, you're raking them off and putting a card over going, I scored points for reasons.
Exactly right. But they did look kind of good in the very temporal way.
Yeah.
So anyway, you do that. You can choose to work. Hello, artists working.
No, come on now.
Which is very, very thematically correct. You get to draw 3 cubes out of a bag.
Yeah.
Or you get to trade in your paint cubes, the ones that you're not going to use because for some reason you got a whole bunch of green ones when really you need blue and black and purple.
We've all been there.
Trade in a couple, get a couple back. Because one of the interesting things about this is that there's always going to be a pretty sizable number of cubes out in the purchasable area. They're a whole different colours, but there's not just 20 blue, 20 green, 20 red.
No.
There is different numbers of different coloured cubes depending on how rare they are. Mm. So it is a really integral part of the game is when you decide to trade in some of your cubes for one of those really rare clear or white cubes, because there are even some wilds there.
Yeah.
Look, that's a very important part of the game.
Especially once you get halfway through and the market's changed a lot.
Yeah.
And everyone's hoarding all the red cubes and all the canvases you've got in front of you need red, and you just kind of sit there twiddling your artistic thumbs.
Exactly. But the trading thing can be expensive because the return is not very good.
No.
So it's only something you really want to do if you're dying to get that one cube that's available for sale and you know that Leon or Trent or Mark or someone else is just going to take it because they're horrible people in general. Now, at the end of the night phase, you also get the opportunity to sell any of your completed artworks, which is where you will gain more paint and more food, which is super duper important, as well as those delicious, delicious victory points, which again you can't eat.
Yep.
But the food is one of the main things because it lets you live another day.
Well,
each of the paintings, they have a different reward on them depending on how many cubes you've had to place or how expensive it was to purchase. And it has a victory point plus a reward for how much paint you're going to get plus how much food you're going
to
collect.
And because of the fact that his food is so hard to come across and you don't often get that much of it in the game, it is a pretty cool feeling, though, when you have completed a painting.
It is.
Because you know you get a fistful of paint,
yep.
Which is, everyone loves paint. But more importantly, you get the food, and because there's always that constant tension in the game of every round, put your food down. Did you put your food down? No, I'll do it now. Did you put down, did you put down your carrot or your grapes or whatever your character may have been? I think mine was grapes, I can't remember.
I think it might have been.
Yeah.
But look, this bloody carrot that we talked about,
yeah.
We did play it wrong.
A little bit.
We were taught it slightly incorrectly in that the carrot, i.e. the first player marker, doesn't move.
Yeah.
It actually does.
Although we can't, I don't recall if that was a thing that we just was misread in the rules, or it maybe was not in the rules correctly.
I don't think it was in the rules.
Yeah, so we just made assumptions and kind of went, well, if it doesn't say it doesn't move on, then I guess Leon's just first player the whole
forever.
Game.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that speaks about the whole inequality of the art trade.
And this, for that reason, this may have been another one of those games that I won, I believe.
Yeah.
Because I was first player every turn. So if I didn't, it would have been a bit of an issue, I think.
It would be very disappointing. But look, that's really all there is to it. It plays pretty quick. I think it looks great.
Which it does.
You would expect it to.
Yeah.
You can get a optional player mat, which makes it all a bit more pretty, and the player mat has a lovely bit of artwork on it that looks very, very nice.
Yeah.
But the game itself, for me, it just needed something else. It's interesting that you got to collect the cubes and you got to make your artworks, and it's really important to time when to sell.
Yeah.
Because part of what happens when you sell is that you get to draw a certain number of cubes from the market. So you might want to get, you know, a whole bunch of cubes that are available, but Leon, because he was first player again, he'll get to sell his painting first,
yes.
Which means he's going to take the cubes and I'll get the dregs.
Yes.
So can I afford to eat again tomorrow and hold off, sell my painting maybe tomorrow when the next player who's first player, which will still be Leon, isn't going to be selling a painting?
Yeah, it's a big crux of the game. You look at it and go, well, I want to sell this painting, but I know Garth's about to sell his this turn. And yeah, as you said, I'm not going to get much out of it. Whereas you look at your food and go, I have to do it, though. I'm going to get next to no paint, but I have to do it. But then again, that is kind of thematic, the fact that back in those days when there was a lot of starving artists around, there's only so much food and or paint to go around.
That is true. But I was in Paris not too long ago, and I went to Van Gogh's old studio, and it was right around the corner from an absinthe bar. So they might have not had food, but they could have got off their face on a bit of absinthe.
I went to his museum in Amsterdam.
Well, there you go.
It was one of the highlights of the trip.
Aww.
Even though I don't art much.
You're so artistic.
I have been told that. I have been told I am borderline artistic.
So anyway, look, I thought this game was okay. I certainly wouldn't choose to play it if I was asked to most of the time. But I do see it as one of those games where is it an educational aspect?
Yep.
Because you could easily play this with kids. The topic is fine, and it introduces kids to a whole world of what the great masters of art actually have, because the majority of the artworks are probably 19th and 20th century works.
Yeah.
And almost all of them are recognisable to anyone with any sort of fleeting interest in art.
Well, that's the thing, is that in this day and age especially, I reckon kids probably wouldn't. The only reason I knew most of the art that was on these cards would have been from, like,
wrestling.
Wrestling. Oh. I have a majority of my knowledge from wrestling. That is very true. But it would have been from television and movies and just things like that. The fact that some of these are a part of, like, pop culture now.
Yeah.
That's the reason I would have known them, not actually have gone to museums or read a book about art. So that's not a bad thing. I think I like this game probably more than everyone else, probably because of one.
Yes.
And I was really enjoying saying, paint. You may have noticed that. I would definitely give it another crack. But, yeah, as you said, it did kind of feel like it was missing something. But, again, as I mentioned before, a good expansion to this, it could do worlds.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
No, you're spot on. So that was Starving Artists. It's still available. If you jump online, I'm sure you can find it. Or you could give a crack to Polymorph Games and Hobbies, because they have an online store.
They do indeed. I have heard this from reliable sources.
Exactly right. So if you have some money kicking around, internet money or real money, please go on to Polymorph Games' website. They'll more than happily help you out there. But anyway, we are going to go to a song, and then Leon is going to come back and regale us with all the Gen Con news that he was able to half-ass research. Is that right?
I think I even three-quarter-ass researched this. That's right.
You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back after these songs.
Oh my God, the town of Tinderbox is on fire. fire.
Still, it feels like we've been talking about this fire for weeks.
Feels like if you name a town Tinderbox, you're asking for trouble.
Well, do you know anyone who lives down there in southern Tasmania?
There is a Tinderbox in southern Tasmania. Fortunately, it's not on fire, at least not at the moment. But what is on fire is Kickstarter over the board game of fantasy firefighting that is...
The Brigade.
The Australian game.
Well, it's a little bit Spanish as well because what? Ben, who is one of the co-designers with Alex Winter of Red Genie Games, lives in Spain. And you know how I know that? Because I spoke to him online about this as I was playing The Brigade on Tabletopia.
The internet is wonderful because if you want to actually find out what this game is like, play it before you back it. You can do it on Tabletopia. You can do it with someone from Spain, from anywhere.
I know. You can see how pretty it looks, how easy it is to play, how easy it is to set everything on fire.
My God, it's like we're living in the future. And if you're listening to this in the future, you have until September the 1st to back The Brigade on Kickstarter. It's just $49 US plus free shipping.
I know.
For the US, for Australia, and for the EU. Is there anywhere else in the world?
Exactly, but look, it's already funded, so you can back it and know you're going to get a copy of this game. But that's not all. You get to have a say in what the stretch goals are.
I've seen this, actually, because they've already passed a stretch goal to upgrade the components.
To Fleeples!
So it's a,
Flame Meeples.
It's a top-notch product that you're getting. There's a co-op rules variant.
There will be co-op.
In case you want to work together to fight the fire.
I have never heard of a firefighting game where everyone works together.
It'll never work.
No. There is also going to be 3 versus 1.
If that's what people vote for.
Yeah.
Because you can vote for what stretch goals you want.
Yeah, they're going to release new ones every $5,000. So the more backers, the more stretch goals, the more rewards.
The Brigade. Choose a hero. Hire your crew. Upgrade your firehouse as the fire spreads through town and you drag your... Flying
fire water wagon.
A fantasy flying fire water wagon.
Indeed.
Now on Kickstarter.
And there is also a big troll called Mog, who looks actually really like you, Trent.
Oh, thanks. That's nice. I know Alex is a fan of the Dice Man, but you didn't have to go that far.
Ah, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard with Trapdoor, as you may have guessed. By the song saying Trapdoor all the time. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Leon, you have got a plane ticket.
Yes.
But not one going to Indianapolis. Is that right?
Sadly, no. I'm just off to the place I've wanted to go my entire life, to Japan in November.
Oh, boo-hoo. So yes. That doesn't matter because we're talking about Gen Con, aren't we?
We are talking about Gen Con, which is going to start in a week or so between the 17th and 20th of August. As you said, the Indiana Convention Center. This is the 50th year.
Oh my God.
Of Gen Con. It started in 1967, which apparently is a time that exists.
Well.
Which I don't believe so.
Mark was one. No. He was one after the first one.
Really?
Yeah.
So
he is really the age of Gen Con.
So basically they're celebrating him is what you're saying.
Well, we won't say that to his face.
And he's probably not listening. He's busy in the Americas at the moment.
It's probably while he's there. He's sort of hoping to get a plaque or something, I'd imagine.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
You know how they're celebrating 50 years of Gen Con?
By having Mark over there?
Well, no.
Oh, good.
They're having a massive concert.
Oh.
By They Might Be Giants.
No way.
Which is awesome. If there's any band you want celebrating 50 years of an obscure kind of hobby,
yep.
You get They Might Be Giants.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because that's just the way it goes. Right, so I this week have scoured the internet's various different articles and videos and whatever else, and I've written down some of the games that I am interested in.
Okay.
And I'm going to share them with you now, and hopefully you'll do the same. So, starting off, Plaid Hat Games, one of my absolute favourites. Publishers.
Yep.
Starting off with Crossfire, which is set in the Spectre Ops universe.
Okay.
Which is not a bad little game, and the universe is very intriguing. It is a social deduction game, because there's not enough of them.
No.
Where you play as two teams. One is trying to assassinate a corporate VIP. The other one is trying to save them.
Okay.
So it does kind of, yes, sound like your standard everyday kind of social deduction type game.
It does.
But... Plaid Hat Games and an interesting universe, and apparently this game's been developed for quite a while.
Okay.
So I expect good things from this.
You expect derops a lot from it, do you?
Is that what we're going to do for every one of them?
Well, why not? But have you got Spectre Ops, or you had and sold?
I have Spectre. No, I've got it.
Okay.
I played it with 5 people, which I think And we took about twice as long as what you're supposed to. But it is a game that I enjoyed enough that I would like to play again.
Okay.
And mainly to probably to be on the other team so I can do the killing as opposed to the dying.
And does the universe intrigue you?
Yeah, it's kind of your futuristic kind of corporations have taken over that whole kind of chestnut, okay. kind of like android type thing.
Sure.
Except there's, you know, big werewolves and stuff in it as well.
All right.
Which is always nice.
We'll see.
Custom Heroes by AEG. It is a card game that uses the same card crafting system as Mystic Veil, which they brought out a couple of years ago. But it is a trick-taking game.
Yep.
So it's not so much where you do the building of the cards and whatever else, but yeah, it's more of a quicker trick-taking game. And it looks really nice and colourful and whatever else.
Yeah, okay. Well, I do... Look, Mystic Veil is one of those really tricky games because the concept behind it of card crafting is great. It's really tactile.
Yep.
And going and seeing the cards laid out on the table and knowing that you're going to be able to create your own personalised deck in the true sense of the word.
Yep.
You're not just getting that same old card that Joe Bloggs has got and they've played with 100 times before.
Yep.
You get to manipulate it that way. That's really, really good. But the base Mystic Veil was not at all exciting for me.
It was interesting, but yes, there was no originality to it at all. It was just your generic fantasy type thing, which normally doesn't even bother me too much. But yeah, it was a bit, kind of fell a bit flat. But that Agreed. Mechanic, yes, that mechanic is dying out for a game to wrap around it.
Totally.
So this could be it.
Yes.
We'll have to wait.
All right, we'll see.
Ex Libris by Renegade Games. A worker placement game about having the coolest and best organized library in a gnomish village.
What?
Yeah,
no,
that's
it
right.
isn't.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. So each player has their own library and you send workers out to get the most exotic and cool books to go into your collection, which will then be judged by the mayor, and the winner will become the official library of this gnomish village.
Really?
Yes.
That's the best theme that they could come up
with. I have heard very good things about this from people that have played it.
Okay.
Again, apparently a game that's been in the works for quite some time.
Yep.
And... I love a good organisation. I like a library.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about it before the show.
Yes.
When you are in your own head, you have built your own dream house.
I have.
And you did explicitly say there was a rather large library in it.
That was, which was going to be next to the master bedroom, and they were even going to have an adjoining balcony. That's a whole different situation. I have a lot of spare time on my 12-hour night shifts. Anywho, the next game, a game I'd never heard of until a week ago, but it is probably going to be one of the biggest games of the convention.
All
it
right.
is number one on the hotness at the moment.
Okay.
By Blue Orange Games, Photosynthesis.
Oh, I did see this on BGG.
Yes. So what you're doing is you're planting trees and there's going to be a sun indicated by something on the board which is moving around. And depending on where your trees are planted and the position of the sun, you will get various different points. I've been told it's kind of the complexity level of like a Splendor type of game.
Yep.
And I have also, from several different sources, have said the same things that I've either read or seen on videos. They said that if this came out 3 months ago, it would have won the spiel.
Yeah, wow.
Like, hands down, it wouldn't have even been a conversation.
Okay.
So, again, I'd not heard of this a week ago.
Yep.
And it's a game about planting trees.
Yeah.
But apparently, people are mad for it.
Well, I mean, Mark, again, has quite often talked about changing Click-Clack Lumberjack to Tok-Tok Tarkine for the Tassie... bent.
Yeah.
So surely we can get the Tasmania expansion for Photosynthesis. But that sounds a lot more interesting to me than gnome library construction.
Well, it hasn't been done before, which is nice. And in this day and age, there's not much of that.
And look, the board, the little 3D trees.
Yeah.
And it looks like you go from planting a little seed chit.
Yep.
And actually being able to see the tree go from small to big to large. And you've got different treeples, I guess that they would be called, wouldn't they?
Of course.
They? But they're basically cardboard standees of different types of trees.
Which we've just copyrighted that, by the way. No one else has ever allowed to use that. Pay us money. But yeah, no, well, we'll see how it ends up. The next one is one of the games I'm looking forward to the most. We've talked about it a few times on the show. Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
Oh, here we go.
By Pandasaurus.
Yes.
So a pickup and delivery game set in a cartoonish Mad Maxi style type universe.
It sounds like it should be... bloody awesome. It's also John Gilmore.
Yeah.
And is it Matt Riddle as well designed, I think?
I believe
so. John Gilmore knows how to design a game. When we talk about Dead of Winter, for example, everyone goes, oh my God, it's the best game.
Yeah.
But it's getting a bit of mixed reviews.
It is.
Now, we probably should just shut up about it because Mark has got this coming.
Yes.
He's got the dinosaur
game coming.
Yeah.
Is it just called Dinosaur Island?
Yeah, something like that.
And then he got this for like $60.
Yeah.
Which is virtually nothing. But, and this is possibly a little bit of PR gone mad, let's say a week ago, is it Pandasaurus that are doing this on?
Yep.
They put out a little press release saying, bad news, guys. The freight company who was shipping all of the copies for Gen Con disappeared.
Right.
Now, they didn't sort of elaborate to say whether the disappeared meaning we can't find the truck or the crate of the games is in a warehouse stuck behind some other boxes and we don't know where it is.
Right.
But it was very, very soon after the whole all of the Lisboa games going to Europe got destroyed in a fire.
Yes, yes.
So whether or not it happened or whether it was just PR people going, hey, here's a
hell of an excuse.
Exactly.
We can't get the game there. Oh, yeah, the company went missing.
I know.
The what now?
Exactly.
Oh, the Bermuda Triangle Trucking Company. Who'd have thunk it? But yes, hopefully once a copy actually physically appears in one of our hands, we'll let everyone
I really want to like this game.
I would hope so.
A great pick-up-and-deliver game is few and far between. I mean, I'll happily sit down and play Firefly if it's the right mission.
Yeah.
I'll play it for a couple of hours. I'm not going to play it for 4 or 5. So,
I will once every 2 years or so.
Yeah, but if Wasteland Express Delivery Service can capture some of that excitement that you would expect being in a Mad Max-style universe, oh, man, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Next, we've got Deadline, which is a film noir-style game similar to your Sherlock Holmes consulting detective, but it also has card hand management systems with it.
Okay.
And each detective has their own special ability. So that alone, I mean, the Sherlock Holmes consulting detective thing is, I think it's an acquired taste, the idea of you basically sitting around reading a storybook out to your friends.
Yep.
But it's something that we've really enjoyed, and there's a few other, there's like a Cthulhu-ish kind of version now, which I can't remember the name of, but I've looked into getting that for myself, and this is just another one, and I do love a bit of film noir.
Yeah.
The comic book writer Ed Brubaker has got me onto that, and now I can't get enough of it.
Oh, that could be interesting.
Yes. Big Trouble in Little China, the board game. Who gives a crap?
Oh, is that your exact notes?
Yep.
All right.
Moving on, Professor Evil and the Citadel of Time from Funforge and Matt Dunstan, the designer of Elysium.
The Aussie. Yeah, okay. And Funforge, I mean, they make Takedo. So
they make a lot of good-looking stuff.
Make a good-looking game. And Matt Dunstan, Elysium, is probably his most well-known, but Relic Runners and a few other games as well. He just had a successful Kickstarter come out that I backed, so, okay. We'll
happy see. Days. It's a 2-4-player co-op where the idea of it is you're going around this lab of Dr. Evil and you're stealing priceless treasures that he's already stolen himself.
Ah.
So you're moving around with your friends trying to do various stuff in this lab while he himself is moving around doing the same thing. So you're trying to unlock vaults and doors and whatever else while he's moving around and like locking doors behind you and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
So, but the production value with this, again, it's a game I'd never heard of until 2 weeks ago and I looked in it, but it looks really interesting.
Awesome.
So we'll see how that comes. Unicornus Knights. A game I know you've been looking forward to quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's a co-op game with a nice bit of anime-style art, which there's lots of games out there with anime-style art, but they normally appeal to people that like anime and then no one else.
Yes.
Whereas I think in mainstream board gaming, it's kind of desperate for a game because anime art, let's face it, is brilliant.
Yep.
Anime art is amazing. It's just the stuff that it's wrapped around half the time. If you're not really into it, you kind of it all looks the same.
Well, it's like, yes, does your waifu like it or not?
Yeah, exactly. Well, my wife, who likes a lot of things. So anyway, the point of this game, which I think is kind of a cool idea, is the princess of the kingdom rides out into a giant epic battle evil hordes on her unicorn knight.
Yeah.
Because she goes, screws this, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And you're set to be all the other soldiers who go in after her because, guess what? Spoilers, she can't take care of herself. She ain't going to win this war. So what you need to try and do is kill all the enemies and get her the hell back in.
Okay.
Which does kind of sound like the video game equivalent of like a protection mission, which always suck.
Oh, the escorts are horrible.
Yes, which is not good. But, you know, it looks kind of interesting.
But on the most recent episode of Game of Thrones, spoiler alert, Daenerys went and did something a bit like that.
Yeah,
she
kind
just
of.
Said, screw you guys, I'm taking my dragon.
But yeah, but she doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't have a unicornus.
No,
and she doesn't quite look like an. She does kind of look like an anime character. Anyway, beside the point. Quest for El Dorado, the game that was nominated for the Spiel. One of them. Which one was it?
Was it the Kinder Spiel?
The Kinder one. Was it? Oh no, was it the normal one? Either way, it's coming out in English, is my point. It was only in German before.
Yes.
It is now coming out at Gen Con in English.
Excellent.
And it looks interesting.
Okay.
Which is, you know, our catchphrase. Speaking of that, flick 'em up, Dead of Winter. The game that everyone thought was a joke.
Yep.
When you first saw a picture, you went, well, that's not a real thing.
I know.
Because it's just not. Apparently it is. Because Flick 'em up is a fun game. It's a game that, it has its place. Conventions, I think, is that place.
Well, that's where you played it a couple of years
ago.
Yeah,
and it was brilliant at a convention. And it's one of the, there is like a storybook you can have it as well, and lots of different missions, and there's lots of different expansions as well. But I suppose it is one of those kind of games that if you had a lot of friends around and you probably need a couple of drinks or at least a few bits of, you know, sugary drinks to get around to play this. But yeah, but the idea of a Dead of Winter version, you know, everyone loves zombies.
Totally.
And flicking stuff at zombies. All right, so we've got a few more that I'll run through really rapidly.
All right, very quickly, please.
So, Hot Shots by Fireside Game.
Oh, the Charlie Sheen movie.
I've written here, sadly not based on the film.
Ugh.
It's a co-op push-a-luck forest fighting firefighting game.
Okay, another firefighting game.
Yeah, well, there's allowed to be two.
Firefighting is the new zombies, seriously.
Well, because there's two.
Well, there's three.
Oh, yeah, true. Either way, Stop Thief. It is a family social deduction game. We talked about the social deduction. Now there's a family version called Stop Thief. Look into it. Whistle Stop. It's a game where you get to move a train around. I like a train.
No, you don't.
I do.
Okay.
Fate of the Elder Gods, co-designed by Richard Lonnie. It's the original Arkham Horror designer.
Ooh.
It is a competitive competitive game where you all play as different cults trying to be the first one to summon your specific ancient horror.
Okay.
And there's minis and dice, so hurrah. Viral is the new game in the Dice Tower Essentials line. Area control, competitive game. You play as different viruses, all simultaneously attacking one human.
Yep.
And you want to be the first one to make them the sickest as humanly possible.
Aww.
By doing things like shutting down organs to score extra points and whatever else. Sounds horrible. And the game that everyone thinks this year is going to be the biggest game of Gen Con, the biggest released, is First Martian.
Yeah.
Adventures on the Red Planet.
It's going to have to be.
The re-theming of Robinson Crusoe in space.
Oh, where you combined.
Exactly.
But anyway, thanks so much, Leon. Look, we've run out of time, so I won't do iOS because we've got about 30 seconds to go.
No.
Look, thanks so much to Polymorph Games and Hobbies for sponsoring this particular episode.
Yes, thank you,
Neil. We have been Leon and Garth. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you to Trent and Mark for not bothering to turn up. It's been lovely and relaxing.
It was an absolute perler, wasn't it?
Indeed. And we will be back same time, same place next week.
With one of them,
with
probably.
One of them, more than likely. So you've been with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Goodbye.
Hooya.
You've been listening to another edit of the Dice Men Cometh. It's broadcast each week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's chopped up and turned into a podcast. But if you're curious about listening to the show in its original format, you can do that on edgeradio.org.au. You can also find us on thedicemencometh.com. If you want to support us, you can jump onto Patreon. If you want to support us but you don't want to give us any money, that's fine too. Just leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Yes, I realize I'm asking you to lie for us. And if you really want to support us, get over to our sponsor, Polymorph Games and Hobbies, and buy something for God's sake from polymorphgames.com.au.